We are the Two Mics.
We certainly are.
This is On The Record, our ever-increasing, ever-expanding podcast series with Audioboom.
I think there's over 3 million people now tuning in.
Well, yes, they've certainly listened 3 million times.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
Which is an amazing statistic. It's very, very good indeed. So thank you to everybody for joining
thank
in.
Thank you.
And if you know anybody else that might want to listen to it, just tell them it's free. You download it from iTunes, you download it from Acast,
that's
all
right.
Some other places with Android access.
Absolutely.
Today... I've got some news for you, Porky.
What's that?
Because I'm going to be talking to you about your student days, right?
My student days,
Your student days, if you can remember them, were probably filled with bladderation, rogerization, and quite a lot of lying in the mornings. Waking up early enough to go to the elections.
I've never, ever lain in the mornings and not got up. As far as I can tell...
Even when you were at university?
Well, you've got to remember that I started getting up at sort of 4:30 or 5:00 in the morning when I was 12 years of age to go and do my paper round.
Yeah, but that's not normal. That's unnatural.
No, it's not unnatural. It's what I wanted to do.
I never did a paper round.
You never did a paper
round? But I did start work at the age of
14. Probably like a fat bastard now.
That's very unkind.
Because, you program your body from an early age to be lithe and supple and get on the
road. Well, you haven't been lithe and supple for about 30 years.
I certainly have.
I beg your pardon. I mean, one third of your heart is only the part that works, right? You've had that problem ever since the turn of the century.
Yeah, it's not my fault, okay? I didn't ask for 2/3 of my heart to collapse.
Yeah,
all right?
Well, unfortunately, it did as a result of your appalling behaviour. Now, here's the thing.
So,
Now, I used to get up to go to work at around about 8:00, so I'd be up about 7:30.
When was this?
When I was a 14-year-old going to work in the bakery.
Oh, I see.
Lewis,
how many days a week was that?
I just used to do it the weekend, Saturday and Sunday.
Did you do it during the school holidays?
I did indeed.
Well, every day?
Yeah, pretty much. Not only did I do it during the school holidays, but I also did it when I went to university.
Yeah,
and continued because it was actually pretty good money. Yeah. So I always had money. I mean, this idea that students...
Well, you used to come home, stay at your parents' place and do a couple of days at the bakery.
Yeah.
Could you find a job in Bath?
Well, I didn't want to stay in Bath because when I was in Bath, the whole point of having school holidays or the university holidays was you came back to London.
Oh, I see, yeah.
You know, but also, and the other thing that I did once, I came back from New York once.
Yeah.
And I'd become, I mean, he became sort of very, very good friends with me, the guy that owned the place.
Yeah.
Right? His name was Louis Permeyer.
Louis Permeyer.
You'd have loved him. He came with nothing from Hungary. Had just had his recipe book in his tracksuit.
Right.
They were all put in internment camps for a while because the Hungarian Revolution had happened.
Yeah.
The Russian tanks had moved in.
That's right.
All these Hungarians came to London. They lived...
It was 1958, wasn't it?
56. They lived in sort of Nissen huts that were part of the former, sort of war troops accommodation, right?
Yeah.
But he worked his way up. He worked three jobs. He ended up with a Rolls Royce.
Yeah.
This guy was very wealthy.
Excellent.
And I came back once from America when I was in my early 20s.
Yeah.
And I went in to see... I always used to take a bottle of Veuve Clicquot. We'd stand there drinking it.
Excellent.
And he said to me, "What are you doing tomorrow?"
Yeah.
I said, "What do you mean?" He said, "Would you fancy coming in and making a few flans?" And I didn't need the money then.
No.
But I said, "Yeah, right then." So I went in on the Sunday.
Well done.
To do a bit of work.
That's all I like. I like the work ethic, you see, to be ingrained into
and
your brain.
And I said to him, "You don't even have to pay me. I said, just make sure that you ply me with champagne."
Yeah.
So I went in about 8:00 in the morning, drank champagne, made flans for about 5 hours.
Brilliant.
Went home.
Well done. That's excellent. So why are you telling me all this?
Well, I'm telling you all this because students now, right? Mm. All you hear from students
lazy
now.
Lazy bums.
Well, not only that, but
I think they're mostly lazy
bums.
Well,
I think that's a bit of a gross generalisation.
No, it's not. Mostly lazy bums.
Well, just shout for a start. Now, here's the thing. Many of them say they come out, it's terrible now because you come out of university with all this debt, right?
Yeah.
Now, first of all, here's my question. Why are they not working while they're in university?
Exactly.
So that they can pay off the debt as they go.
In America, they talk about flipping burgers while they go through college, okay?
Well, they all
they
work
pay
in
their
bars.
Own way through college.
Yeah. I mean, my former wife, who was a student in America and here, she worked all the way through college.
Exactly.
You know, now you might say it was a bit cheaper to go there in those days, but she always worked.
Don't care.
She worked as a waitress, she
worked
as a bartender.
Even though
what
I got
did you do when you went to the University of the Trent?
I worked in the 19th and 21st Lancers pub three nights a week while my mates were all wasting their bleeding time you know, knocking around in town.
I bet you used to sneak
a half a beer here and a half a beer
there. I bet you used to sneak a few drinks that you didn't pay for, right?
Yes, I did, yes.
All the time?
Yes, but that was a
that's
well-known perk.
That's the only reason
perk.
You got the job.
No, it's a well-known perk. Yeah. Well-known perk
Give yourself.
Job.
Did anybody ever go, "Oh, about half for yourself, Mr. Perry"?
Yeah, all the time.
Yeah.
In fact, what the bums would do is, they would say something like, they'd come and say, you know, it was in Nottingham, they all talk like this, me duck.
Yeah.
All right, me duck.
Me duck,
yeah. All right, me duck.
Isn't that a bit Yorkshire?
No, me duck is Derbyshire.
No, I mean, I know me duck is Derbyshire, but the way you're saying it, it sounds like Yorkshire.
No, it goes like this. All right, me duck. You know, and they'd say, right, Michael, I'll have a pint of bitter and have a swift half yourself.
Yeah.
And then when they ordered the next round, they said, "Well, I think I'll just have half now, unless you'd like to make it up to a pint."
Yeah, yeah.
I.e., pay me my half.
Did you
beer
also
back?
Get that one where they'd give you the glass with about sort of a third of a pint in it? and just say, just top it with half.
Yeah, that's
and
right.
You're supposed to top all the way to
the
top.
Yeah, exactly.
You can't really do that anymore, can you?
Yeah,
you
can't do that anymore.
It doesn't happen anymore.
But anyway, the point is that I could never understand when I went to the University of Trent why, when I looked at my syllabus, when I looked at the, you know, the programme events in a week,
right.
I was only expected to turn up for about 10 hours in a week.
Yeah.
And some of those were these, you know, really stupid things called seminars, where you sat around...
Well, that's where you're supposed to learn what you're doing.
Where you sat around with six other people and talked bollocks for about 2 hours, right, and didn't
but
learn
But you would
anything.
Hate that, because unless you're talking, you're not really interested.
Well, I mean, I, that's probably true.
You don't want
to
hear anybody
Nobody
else
had anything to offer. So I decided then, I didn't want to be a student, so I left after the first year. I didn't even bother taking the exams. I won the snooker and darts competitions, because I practised
And what did your parents say
else?
When you turned up at the house and went... You know what? I've just chucked it in.
Yeah,
I'm going to worst nightmare.
No, I'm going to get a proper job. So I got a job in newspapers, right? You know, immediately became a whiz-bang success.
So you say.
But what I don't understand is this, right? Mm. You see, bloody Blair, again, you know, to try and gerrymander the situation in this country, said... I think we'll turn a lot of the technical colleges and polytechnics into universities to give every young person a chance to go to university.
Which is what, exactly what they did.
Yeah, and you know that did. That knocked off the dole queues, you see. They said, you know, the Tories, too many people on the dole.
Yeah.
No, no, the Tories were running an efficient economy, and Blair decided, I tell you what, send them all to university.
Yeah, but you know what he also did? He created all these businesses, right?
Yeah.
So all of these universities and supposedly kind of academic houses are all now massive money-making machines.
Yeah.
So they're now bringing more and more students in.
That's right.
Because no matter whether those students are actually getting any benefit whatsoever
from
going there, right, makes no fucking difference to the rest of the world.
The guy who's head of a university in somewhere like Buckinghamshire...
Yeah, the University of Buckinghamshire. There's
a good one. Or somewhere down in the West Country. I'm not joking, like the University of Totnes or something like that.
I nearly went to the University of Exeter. That
the
was
University
on my list.
Of Exeter. These guys pay themselves 650 grand a year as principal of the university.
No, I know.
And they used to be technical colleges 10 years ago. They're lazy bums. Most students are lazy bums.
One university which is not a red brick university or indeed a modern polytechnic is, of course, the University of Durham. You'll know.
Durham's great university.
It's one of the oldest universities in the world, right?
If you go up on the train to Newcastle, as you stop at
Newcastle,
Durham, I'm going to leave old Durham town.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm going
to
leave old Durham town. Anyway,
you
look to your right as you're going north and you see two things. One, Durham Cathedral, magnificent.
Magnificent.
And the other one, the main building of Durham University.
Yeah.
It is fantastic, right? And in fact, you know, a friend of mine who turned up at the University of the Trent had got thrown out of Durham after 1 year because he was a lazy bastard who'd spent too much time drinking and joined me on the Urban Estate Management course. He then went on, actually, afterwards to qualify in the four-year course, got himself a what's called an ARICS, that's Associate of the Royal Institute of Chartered Surveyors. Excuse me.
You could have done what this guy did, but you were too lazy.
No, I was too determined not to get sucked into the student
life. Well, I think he's done quite well, hasn't he?
And he then, his father gave him a loan to buy a chain of just four estate agents. It's now about 180.
Right.
So he did very well.
He did indeed. Mm. Now, here's what they're doing in Durham, and particularly in the law school, right? But the reason they're doing it is because they've got too many students. Because what they're doing now is cramming more and more students in. Because when the government said to them, oh, by the way, you can charge as much money as you like, up to £9,000
a year.
But they didn't say, if you're a shit university, you can't charge that.
Right.
So everybody went, okay, it's £9,000.
Yeah.
So whether you're going
to
the University of Wallamaloo, you know, somewhere shit house in the West Country, or Oxford, it's £9,000.
Right.
Doesn't matter what you get, right?
Yeah.
So they're going to make these students turn up for lectures at 8 o'clock in the morning.
Good. Love it.
You know?
Great.
And guess what? Guess
get
what,
up, you lazy bastards.
Guess what first-year law student Celine Dilal Cart said, it feels like this is a stab in the dark.
I'd
understand if it affected one or two of my modules, but it's half
Modules? What's a module?
But it's half of them. The time we're expected to dedicate to reading, internships, CV building, extracurricular and independent study will undoubtedly be further influenced by this,
load of bollocks.
As it's difficult to sustain an effective work mode when fatigued.
I'll
tell you what, she's already on my shit list for talking such cobblers.
That's right, at her age,
if that is the best they can come up with out of the University of Durham Law School.
Yeah.
Quite frankly, it's a load of old
crap. These students moan, £9,000 a year over 3 years, that's
£27,000.
Yeah. Well, make the bleeding course 2 years, not three.
Well, you can make it three, but get a job.
No, make it two.
Come on.
Because they only work for half the week. They have, like, 12 weeks holiday in the summer. They have 4 weeks holiday at Christmas and Easter. Right. They don't even go there and study for half the year. When they do, they only spend half the week going to lectures and things. I mean, it's the easiest profession in the world. A mate of mine called Willie Lamb, right?
Willie Lamb.
Yeah, and he was in the King's School First.
No relation to Norman Lamb.
No.
Or Larry Lamb.
No, ahead of me. He was quite a bright lad. So he went off to Leeds University.
Oh, yeah.
And then I saw him because we both played for the King's School Old Boys. Okay. You know, right. I was a star in that one as well.
You back today?
Oh yeah, I was King's School Old Boys.
How long did you play that game for?
About 3 years. Really? I played for the Old Boys. Yeah, Okay. And then younger people take over from you. You know what I mean? And you get too pissed to be able to play or want to play. You know what
younger
I mean?
Younger old boys.
Yeah, I mean, you know, if I'm out in a in the King's. Funny enough, the disco was called the King's as well. The King's Disco in Chester.
Was everything called the King's?
I think it was. Yeah,
King's Arms. King's Head.
I was out there till 3 a.m. and then had a job on Saturday morning at the Chester Chronicle, where you know I had to work one in two Saturdays. And then you're expected to turn up and play for the King's School Old Boys 3 o'clock on Saturday afternoon. Didn't work well.
Better things to do, especially if you've been in a pub since one.
That's right, yeah, exactly.
I mean, you've already told us about your working day in those days, which seems to spend most of your time actually in the pub.
Definitely. You know? So anyway, Willie Lamb, so I saw him, and he was a jovial guy, you know, always had a smile on his face. And he went to Leeds University, and he... I don't know, I think he studied economics, actually, economics. And I said, oh, right, OK, Willie, so how did it go then? I got 2-1. Oh, brilliant, that's OK. So, looking for a job now? Yeah. No, I've decided to do a master's. So, 2 years later, when he comes back, by this time, I went to watch the Old Boys games and then go drinking massively. He and I both went to watch, you know, because younger people had come through. Yeah. Massive drinking session afterwards. It was in the King's School Chester Rowing Club, you know what I mean?
Okay. Yeah.
The game was played at Boughton Hall, then we all piled down to the rowing club.
How many of you were watching it?
Had its own bar, about 20.
Right.
About 20, had its own bar. So I get down there 2 years later. How's it going, Willie? How's it going? It's great, it's great. What have you got now? I got a 2-1 in an MA.
Yeah.
Oh, you got an MA? Yeah. Oh, great. I thought economics was like a science. Oh, no. I took a master's in economics. Oh, great, okay. So you're going to get a job now?
Right.
No. I've decided to take a PhD.
PhD, very good.
Oh, right,
year.
Okay. Yeah. So saw him next year, you know. I said, hey, Willie, how did it go? I got a PhD. Oh, excellent. Right, so now you go and get a job, yeah? Yeah. I said, what is it? He says, I'm a lecturer at Leeds University. he never stopped being a student.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, he literally never stopped being a student.
Well, I mean, you can make a lot of money being a lecturer now as well. It's not such a terrible thing to do.
Well, I'm not sure you could in those days. What I'm saying is the lazy bastard got so into the ways of the student lifestyle.
But there are people like
he just
that.
Decided to keep on doing it.
There are people who like that. But I would find that very, very difficult and limiting, actually, to be hanging around with a load of students.
I tell you what I do like, because, of course, I went for an interview at Brasenose College, Oxford.
Well, so you say.
I did.
Yeah.
I did. There's no doubt about it.
I don't know why you would have gone there, though.
Well, I would have loved the elegance of it. You know, the punting on the River Isis?
I thought that was a Cambridge thing, isn't it?
No, punting...
I thought punting was a Cambridge thing.
It's
on
both.
The River Cam.
No, on the Cam at Cambridge, but on the Isis at Oxford.
Oh, yeah.
I know it's called the Isis because our former boss, Sir Nicholas Lloyd, was editor of the...
It's called the Isis magazine,
the
isn't
Isis
it?
Magazine, yeah. Named after the river,
yes,
right?
Right.
Well, not Nick's doing these days, by the way.
Well, I think he's still running a rather successful PR company with Peter Brown. Peter Brown, actually, has named came up the other day in something I was reading.
Oh, yes.
I'll tell you why.
Yes.
Because he, I think, was the original Beatles PR guy in America.
Yeah, he was, yeah. So that's
and
right.
I've actually been to his apartment.
That's right,
in Manhattan. Because I once was having dinner with Sir Nicholas's wife.
Eve Pollard. The lovely Eve Pollard.
And it was when you and I both knew a man by the name of Phil Finn.
Phil Finn, yeah.
And she was the editor of Sunday Express.
Yeah.
And she wanted me to do more stuff for her, basically.
Right, yeah.
But as a sort of courtesy, whenever she came to New York, she would have to have dinner with Phil and his wife.
Yeah.
And the problem was, they'd arranged dinner for 8 o'clock or something in Layal, that place we used to go, right?
Yes.
Which I'd sort of introduced everybody to.
Yes.
She said
to me...
the
one that had the butcher shop at the front.
That's right.
Yeah.
And she said to me, you know, why don't we meet before dinner, and that way we can chat about stuff. Why don't you come to Peter's apartment?
Yes.
And I was like, okay. Yeah. You know, when we lived in New York, you know, we were lucky if we had a one-bedroom apartment, which was nice, because whenever you saw these movies, you'd see these amazing apartments.
That's right.
This guy had one of those amazing apartments.
Right, okay.
It literally went on forever.
Yeah.
And it was on Central Park West, up near, not far from where Strawberry Fields is now, in the 60s.
Yeah.
And it was cavernous, you know. You were going to have to go to the toilet. There was about four bedrooms, two reception rooms.
But you know,
rooms.
Another one like that, who I went to interview, Barbara Taylor Bradford.
Well, I would imagine,
And she actually...
She was good friends with Phil and Amory, wasn't
she? That's right. That's how I got in there. I got in there with them, you know, and she...
Was she not in the same building as them?
No. Definitely not. Oh, no, no, no. They lived in a pretty rank and file.
Well, a basic kind of apartment.
No. Hers was magnificent. It had two balconies, one on either side of it. Well, one on either corner of her apartment. Yeah. And we stepped out on the balcony and she just gestured towards Central Park and said, not bad for a lass from Yorkshire, Michael, is it? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And
she's still alive, by the way.
Yeah, I think she is. I think her husband's gone, but I think she is still alive, you know? A woman of substance.
That's indeed
the film
right.
was made.
I haven't read any of that.
Lead role, Jenny Seagrove, my
is that
friend.
Right?
Anyway, get back to these student bastards, right? So all they do is waste their time. They need to do 2 years, not three. When they come out, they then move into all sorts of jobs that don't need doing. Because, of course, what Blair and Brown had to do was, if they were going to send all these people to university to get degrees, then they had to invent new jobs. Like, for instance...
Like what?
Well, you know, the jobs which exist now, which never existed then. Like, for instance, the industry of... You know, come on, help me out
I don't know.
The industries like...
I don't know. What, computing?
No. That's a proper job. Industries...
What do you mean, like media studies and all that?
Media studies, the big one.
Well, they all want to be journalists.
They all want to be journalists. Yeah. And when, you know, when I was their age, there was no media studies.
No.
Now it's a massive, massive... Bournemouth University, one-third of their students do media studies.
I told you they wanted me to go and lecture there, didn't
Unbelievable, eh?
I told you they wanted me to go and lecture down there.
Unbelievable.
That's how pathetic it is.
But also, what I'm saying
you
is...
You see the time, by the way.
No, don't worry about the time.
No, I'm not worried about it.
These new industries, which have grown up from nothing, are things like social care...
Management consultancy.
Yeah. Thank you, that's one of them.
But everyone's had that, though. Management consultancy. McKinsey was one of the first companies in America that did management consultancy. They were doing that in the 50s.
Yeah. But hang on, hear about this. You know one of the fastest growing industries in this country?
Go on.
Human resources.
Ah, yes. Yeah.
The human resources industry. Oh. Now, human resources never existed when Blair got into power.
No.
Now it's a massive billion-pound industry.
Well, but one of the reasons for that is because if you make a mistake at work, vis-à-vis your relationships with people, you know, they can be exposed to massive amounts of money that they have to pay out to people.
Yeah, but that's because they invented...
People like you are fucking insulting.
No, they invented another fucking industry called, you know, management care. And all this bollocks, you know what I mean?
Right.
Load of bollocks. We have to invent new industries which never existed to employ legions of students who are thick-headed, no good, no worth to society individuals who just float along in life doing non-jobs.
Okay. Anyway, that's enough about students, because we don't want to spend the entire podcast just talking about students. I had a great time as a student. Like you, I didn't finish my degree course because I always felt that I could do better by going straight into newspapers and actually getting a job in a paper rather than getting a qualification, because I would have had a BSc, I think, in economics and politics had I finished my degree.
Yeah, I wouldn't have done you bloody good.
Well, I mean, this is why I know an awful lot about economics and politics, because I studied it, you know, and that's what I did.
Yeah, sure. Mm. Now, I want to tell you about something else, actually, which gets my goat, all right?
Go on. Okay.
Now, I have never in my life ever been tempted to go online, of course, it wasn't around when we were youths
in
our 20s, to try and find myself a partner in life, okay?
No.
But now, of course, it's a massive money-making industry.
It certainly is.
And people do it. Now, what I'm very pleased
about...
Well,
a lot of people only do that. I mean, that's how they meet people, is they go onto Tinder, one of these apps, Grindr.
My niece met her last boyfriend on a website, dating site, and all that.
What was it called? Do you know?
No, I don't know what it was called. I don't care. He turned out to be a punk, right? I should have gone round and smacked him around the head because he didn't treat her properly. And if he ever does it again, I will.
Yeah.
Okay. But the point is...
Well, she's not with him anymore, then.
No, of course not. No, no. The guy was a louse. Okay.
Louse.
Yeah. So what I'm saying is, unless you actually see what you're getting, you can't see it on a website. Now, the reason I bring this up is... a woman who's very clever invented this new service based in Kensington, of course, where you pay £12,500.
What?
£12,500 to be guaranteed to be introduced.
Well, it's just like a one-off payment.
It's, yeah, what it is
or
is...
once a year or something?
No, it's not once a year.
That's a lot of money.
It's 12,500 and they guarantee to introduce you to 12 Potential suitors.
Okay.
And they say after that, and if you can't pick one of 12, it's not our fault. Yeah. You know, which is fair enough, I suppose.
Well, I suppose, depending on who the 12 are.
Yeah, well, then you pay another 12 and a half grand, you see, and get another 12. Yeah, and all this kind of stuff.
You've got more fucking money than sense to do that.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Mm. But anyway, the point of the story is that this lady takes up this offer, right? And it's all based in Kensington. These are all high flyers and all that kind of stuff, okay?
Yeah.
And
but isn't that partially what the problem is with places like this? Because they base themselves in Kensington. Mm. There's plenty of parts of Kensington that are bloody awful, by the way.
But, you know,
they kind of do this whole, oh, of course, we're top of the range, Kensington, you know. Yes. Only the top people come here.
Yes.
Well, no, rubbish.
Anyway, it's called the 70-30 Dating Agency.
70-30?
Yeah, I know why it's called 70-30.
Is that because 70-year-old men like to date 30-year-old women?
Well, I don't know, and I'm not getting into that. I'm not going to do dirty old men and all that kind of stuff. But one called Teresa Burkey.
Burkey?
B-U-R-K-I. She,
Burkey.
Yeah, she paid for the gold membership of 70-30, agency based in Kensington. And what they do is, when you start making inquiries about what are the sort of people I'll meet, they send you a profile of three people.
Right.
And you think, wow, they're nice. Mm. Now, the problem is that she never then was introduced to one of the three people who were used as the bait.
Ah.
Do you see what I mean?
So you're saying that they might not actually exist, these three people?
Well, I'm not saying that, because that's accusing them of deception.
No, indeed.
Well, I mean, who knows? They might have
said... But they could be models.
Well,
right?
well, no. The woman was sent, like, profiles of three men.
Yeah.
And you could always say that, oh, well, by the time she took up the offer, those three men had been taken by others. You know what I mean?
Right.
Or something like that.
Well,
but anyway, she was so disappointed with the outcome of all this...
Yeah.
That she decided to sue.
All right.
And she paid her membership fee in 2014 after liking a number of profiles she was shown of men on the agency's files. Mm. But she has now gone to court, wants her money back. She told the court she was not then put in touch with any of those men and that the profiles she was shown later did not in any way match the criteria she put down on her application form of the sort of people she wanted to meet.
Has she not just been a bit too picky, though? I mean, what did she put down?
Well,
what did she say she wanted?
Well, you know, she said she wanted...
Aston Martin, must be
I think she did. This is supposed... this is supposed to be very, very upmarket, OK? Yeah. And anyway, the lady who runs it, whose name is Susie Ambrose, right?
Yeah.
Not only is she resisting this,
she's
counter-suing this lady for slander and defamation
you be careful what you say,
of her business. Absolutely.
You don't want to be enjoined
that,
do you?
No, the agency in their defence say we provide an excellent service and they're suing for libel and malicious falsehood over reviews which the lady concerned published online.
See, this is the other problem, right?
Yeah.
Because nowadays, every single... But they did a study about this not long ago. There's a thing called TripAdvisor, right?
Yes.
In fact, we talked about this because when you went to Daya the other weekend to see your sister and your niece...
Indeed.
...in the night manager's restaurant, right?
Yes.
One of the problems I had when I went to Daya was that we walked all the way down... And all the way back up again.
Which
nearly
hell.
Fucking killed me, by the way.
That would take about an hour and a half.
Well,
you know?
I think it took us about 2 hours to get back up.
It must have done. It's a terrible
and quite a long
hill.
Time to get down.
Yeah.
The problem was, the reason we did that was because my other half had looked on TripAdvisor, in which the advice was from all these people, numbnuts who go and just write things, and you don't know if any of them are fucking to be trusted,
no,
or anything.
No.
It just said, don't, whatever you do, don't drive down there because there's only limited car parking space. And if you get all the way down and there's no car parking space, all you can do is drive all the way back up, right?
Not so.
So I thought we got down there because it was quite early in the morning.
Yeah.
There was loads of car parking space.
Load of bollocks.
And I said to her, we should have just brought the bloody car, which we'd left at the top.
Yeah.
You know, so I don't go for this TripAdvisor stuff. But everything now that everybody does, or anybody does, there's some wanker giving you a review.
Exactly.
I mean, I'm surprised we don't have people. Well, actually, we can.
Yeah.
I mean, you can go on the Records iTunes account.
Yes.
And you can actually leave a review of this particular podcast.
Right.
Most of them are pretty good, I have to say.
Look, let's get back to this one, because this is human relationships,
What does she look like, this woman, by the way?
Both women are very attractive. Mm. For instance, the woman who feels she's the injured party.
Burkey.
Burkey. Yeah. She's 46.
Uh-huh.
A city worker, describe herself as.
Okay.
The other lady.
The owner.
The owner, Susie Ambrose, looks stunningly attractive to me. Got a very, very nice figure and all that kind of stuff, you know. Yeah.
You didn't let that slip out.
Yeah, well, yeah.
She's very curvaceous, I think.
Very curvaceous, that's right. And she described herself as a psychotherapist.
Oh, yeah.
So she says, you know, I'm able to match people from their profiles which are written down.
Right.
Now, the point is, I don't know about you, but every lady I've ever sort of copped off with in my life...
Copped off?
Yeah, copped off.
Is that,
it's an old expression.
Those are the words you wish to use?
Yes. I've immediately felt a spark, or not a spark, you know what I mean?
That's not a spark you're feeling.
No. You know within seconds when you meet somebody whether there is a schism, you know what I mean?
I know what you mean, yeah.
You know, that electricity.
There are certain women and men, I'm sure, if you're a woman, who give that off,
I've seen women who have, you know, latched onto me almost immediately when I've not even wanted them to.
No.
And I mean, for instance...
What a terrible problem for you.
Yeah. On one occasion...
When's the last time that
happened? Well, let me tell you, on one occasion when I was younger, I was at a particular house of a particular person.
Oh, yeah.
And
it was a party scenario?
It was a party scenario. In fact, I think it was a christening.
Oh, yeah.
I think we were all there to celebrate a christening. Mm. I think we'd been to the christening. And I'd noticed this woman in the christening, who was stunningly attractive.
Oh, yeah.
Very dark hair, shapely, and all this kind of stuff.
Right. Was it Susie Ambrose, was it?
It wasn't Susie Ambrose, no. And it was a big house we went back to. Uh-huh. This was down on the south coast somewhere. Okay. I can't quite remember who it was.
Yeah.
And, you know, I was a friend of friend, and she was like, you know...
It wasn't a family thing.
It wasn't a family thing, no. And she lived locally. And we were in the kitchen drinking when she, you know, and we'd been talking, and there was electricity there, you could tell.
Was there?
Electricity.
Yeah.
And
well, let's hope there would be electricity in the kitchen.
That's right. She then grabbed the sleeve of my shirt.
Really?
And started guiding me towards a door.
Really?
Yeah. And I thought...
Which door? What, she was trying to get you out?
No. This is the interesting thing. And I didn't know what this was leading to, but I was quite happy...
Drink had been taken at this
point?
Quite a lot.
But
sounds like it.
I was quite happy to be led. And in fact, she took me into the garage.
Really?
Where,
how did she even know where the garage was?
Well, I think she was well known to the people who owned the house.
Taking a few other people in there, do you think?
Well, I don't know. But the conclusion of this story is that...
You didn't end up shagging her in the garage.
Fraternisation took place across the bonnet...
That's somebody else's house.
Across the bonnet...
That's a shocking story.
Across the bonnet of a BMW car.
Blimey.
Yeah, it was a BMW, I remember.
It was lucky it wasn't a Mercedes because they've got the big emblem on the front.
Yeah, that's
What about if the fucking garage door had opened?
Well, that would have been a problem.
That would have been a problem.
But I mean, the garage door's at the back.
Was she kind of naked then?
I don't want to get into that.
That's a shocking story.
I just said fraternisation.
Shocking.
But what I'm saying is, it happened so quickly, it was unbelievable. Mm. But there was this, you know, this irresistible sort of.
How long did you stay in the garage for?
Oh, about 20 minutes, I think.
Bloody
yeah. And something like
did
that.
Did you still have your drink in your hand?
Well.
Or had you put those down?
No, I think I'd put the drink on the shelf or something like that. You know
bloody
what I mean?
Hell. But, I'm not easily shocked.
No.
But you've just shocked me.
What I'm saying
you
is.
You shocked me with that story.
What I'm actually saying here is that. You know, that was a spark, which obviously sparked. Now, you can't get that on a dating website.
You can't, but what I suppose you can do is you can pick somebody that you'd like the look of.
Yes.
I've never fancied doing it either, to be honest, because looking at somebody's all very well.
Yeah.
But until you get to know them, or at least you talk
to
them...
Well, they could be a nutter.
Well, they usually are,
That's what I'm saying. If you go to a website, you are dealing with the desperate, aren't you?
Well, no,
because
not
they must be desperate, because...
No, see, that's not true.
Eh?
That's not true anymore.
What do you mean?
Because nowadays, a lot of people go on these websites, so it's no longer unusual, and it's no longer that people are desperate. People say they go on these things for loads of reasons.
Yeah.
For example, people will say, I'm just too busy to organise... to ask anybody out from work. Also, people, don't forget, people are shit scared now to ask people out from work. I mean, if I went up to somebody at work...
That's right.
You now don't know whether you're allowed to ask them out. You don't know whether you're allowed to say anything to them, which might be misconstrued.
Absolutely.
They might think you're some dirty old git. You know, if you said you fancy coming out for a drink.
Yeah.
You know, I remember at one point a couple of years ago, when we were all going out for a drink after a show, and I sort of said to one of the newsreaders, you know, do you fancy coming for a drink?
Yes.
And she kind of froze, because I think she thought I was asking her out for a drink on
her own. Exactly,
And she kind of looked at me, and I went, well, we're all going.
Yeah.
And she was like, no, I can't, you know.
No, exactly.
So it's a minefield.
Yeah, well,
Total minefield.
It is a minefield. Now, the other thing I was going to say is, do you remember terrific story about the Duchess of York, Fergie, as we know, she had a personal assistant who... had a...
Do you mean the crazy one?
I mean the crazy one.
Who ended up in prison.
Oh, for murder?
Yeah.
She did 17 years.
Yeah.
But
she's
do you know what?
Now.
Oh, she's out, yeah. But do you know two or three of the royal press pack
fraternised?
With
her?
Yes.
What, before or after the murder?
Before, of course, because after she got charged and locked up for it, you know?
Stranger things have happened.
No, strange things
have
happened.
I mean, lots of women find themselves fraternising, as you put it, with male convicts.
Oh, yeah, they do, yeah.
And also not just while they're in prison, but when they come out.
Members of the Royal Press Pack were not convicts, right? They were journalists, all right?
Some of them should have been.
So, well, we do know.
Actually, one of them was.
yeah, exactly. That's right, yeah. Some of our friends have ended up being pokey, yeah.
Indeed.
But anyway, what happened was, she was off her rocker.
Yeah.
And,
but dangerously off her rocker,
dangerously off her rocker, American boyfriend. Mm-hmm. When she discussed marriage one night, he didn't give as big a commitment as she thought he should have done.
So she stabbed him about 87 times.
No, he went for a lie down. Yeah. But just to make sure he couldn't react to the stabbing, she smashed him across the head with a cricket bat in his room first, right, just to make sure he was unconscious.
Yeah, yeah.
And then stabbed him 87 times. Yeah. And then drove off, parked in a lay-by, and started ringing a friend saying, what's all the fuss about, and all this kind of stuff, you know. Now, she is the perfect sort of nutter you might find on a... website.
Well, that's true. But what I'm saying is that it's now far more widespread as a practice. So, so the chances of you finding a nutter have been kind of slimmed down.
No, they've been been expanded because there's more women on websites.
No.
By the way, I'm not blaming women. A load of men are nutters, and men, I'm sure, take advantage of these websites by passing themselves off as airline pilots in fact they drive
that's the kind of thing you
garbage truck, you know, in somewhere like Hartlepool or something.
What's wrong with driving a garbage truck in Hartlepool?
Nothing, but don't pass yourself off as an airline pilot, kind of thing you would do. There's a feature in one of our national newspapers and it's called The Date.
Oh, yeah.
And what they do is they match up two people of similar age, which they get off a profile. You send your profile in to this, you know, this is a regular weekly feature in the newspaper, and then they match two people together.
So you have to do that willingly. You want
you
to
do it willingly.
Up.
You do it willingly, and
they match you up because you've got similar ages.
I don't know. Some psychologist or something matches you up, and then you read her story and his story the week after, and all that kind of stuff. You know, and I mean, not one of them has ever ended up with we've fallen in love.
Well,
the whole
Love Island bollocks, right?
Yeah.
The Love Island story is meant to be for people who want to find true love. Now, that's sort of
rubbish.
Maniac.
They want to find true celebrity.
Well, no, but apparently the story is that the people that go into Love Island and those who there have been some who are still together.
By the way, is it a real island?
It's in Mallorca they film it.
Oh, yeah, well, have they got Little Island off Mallorca,
no,
so to speak?
No, they filmed in Mallorca.
Oh, don't they have... I thought it was a special island, that they bought.
No.
You know, like Necker or something like that, you know?
No, I think it's just in Mallorca, but it's an island, so they call
it
Love Island.
So it's a villa in Mallorca.
It's a villa in Mallorca, yeah.
I see,
I mean, but the thing
and
is...
And there's a lot of, like, you know, shagging going on.
Yeah,
is that,
apparently.
Is that what it's all about?
Well, I mean, I don't watch it, because I've watched the first episode because I wanted to talk about the radio. I watched a little bit of it the other night, because I thought, I'll just see if it's got any better.
Yeah.
It is so inane.
Yeah.
Literally, you can't watch it for more than 5 minutes. Well, you know, the thing is, he didn't really feel that way towards me. How did you feel? And it's all just crap. But they've all gone in there looking for love.
The bikini doesn't fit me.
Yeah, I'm just have to be naked. And it's all about sort of illicit shagging and all sorts of horrible stuff.
Terrible.
It's
shocking.
Dreadful. It's shocking. Really awful. But they're all going in there looking for love.
Right.
And they don't think that's weird.
I don't think you can go looking for love. I honestly believe you've got to wait for love to hit you.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, that's one way of looking at it. We're the two mics.
We were in the kitchen drinking when she, you know, we'd been talking and there was electricity there, you could tell.
Was there?
Electricity.
Yeah.
And
well, let's hope there would be electricity in the kitchen.
That's right. She then grabbed the sleeve of my shirt.
Really?
And started guiding me towards a door.
Really?
Yeah. And I thought...
Which door? What, she was trying to get you out?
No. This is the interesting thing. And I didn't know what this was leading to, but I was quite happy.
How much drink had been taken at this
quite
point?
Quite a lot. But
sounds like it.
I was quite happy to be led. And in fact, she took me into the garage.
Really?
Where?
How did she even know where the garage was?
Well, I think she was well known to the people who owned the house.
Taking a few other people in there, do you think?
Well, I don't know. But the conclusion of this story is that...
You ended up shagging her in the garage.
Fraternisation took place across the bonnet.
At somebody else's house.
Across the bonnet.
That's a shocking story.
Across the bonnet of a BMW car.
Blimey.
Yeah, it was a BMW, I remember,
Yeah, it's lucky it wasn't a Mercedes because they've got the big emblem on the front.
Yeah, that's
right.
What about if the
fucking garage door had opened?
Well, that would have been a problem.
That would have been a problem.
But I mean, the garage door's at the back.
Was she kind of naked then?
I don't want to get into that.
That's
I said fraternisation.
Story.
I just said fraternisation.
I bet you used to sneak a few drinks that you didn't pay for, right?
Yes, I did. Yes,
all the time.
Yes, yeah. But that was a
that's
well-known
the
perk.
You got the job.
That was a well-known perk. Yeah. Well-known perk.
Give
of the
yourself.
Job.
Did anybody ever go, "Oh, I better hold for yourself, Mr. Perry"?
Yeah, all the time.
Yeah.
In fact, what the bums would do is they would say something like, they'd come and say, you know, it was in Nottingham. They all talk like this, me duck. Yeah, all right, me duck.
Me duck. Yeah.
All right, me duck.
Isn't that a bit Yorkshire? But everything now that everybody does, or anybody does,
yeah.
There's some wanker giving you a review.
Exactly.